welcome to Linux for the Restless, episode number 105. Show where we talk about the Linux operating system and the whole world around Linux, and actually how Linux revolves around the world. See, I got pretty profound there for a second, didn't I?
Quite.
Anyway, the goal of this show is to help anybody who's interested in Linux get more out of the operating system, maybe learn a thing or two, get the latest news, latest advancements, all kinds of cool stuff about Linux. So I hope you enjoy the show. We got somewhat of a special show, this show, because we just basically came back from the Ohio Linux Fest, a lot of us, and we're going to be doing this is the first time broadcasting ever, I think, Door-to-Door Geeks talk at the Ohio Linux Fest. And let me introduce the man now, and we'll talk about that a little bit. What's up, Door?
I think my liver is starting to come back to the normal swing of things. I give it about a week, and then I'll be fine.
I'm with you on that. I don't think my liver forgave me for this weekend because I just got a cold, and I rarely get sick. But then again, I rarely drink as much as I drank.
Exactly.
And you know what? It wasn't all about drinking. We do the thing during the day, then we go and just get some drinking, do some drinking at nights. You know, it's not like...
Well, yeah, and it isn't like we had beer bongs or anything. I mean, we basically just sat around, relaxed, talked, and sipped all night.
Yeah.
And I can say, even though I do a podcast about brewing beer, I easily drank as much beer probably as I've drank in the last 8 months. And it wasn't like, you know, I didn't need to go to the ER. It wasn't like we went crazy. It was just good times.
Yeah.
Well, and, it really was. And we had Tracy's homebrew, so that kind of helped.
I was amazed by the hospitality. Tracy was just like handing beers to us, and his beers were awesome. And we were always welcome in his room, and him and everybody else there were just fantastic. It was a really good time. I'm so happy I get to meet all the people that I only usually see over a webcam.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to sound dumb, but it's like we said last year. Yes, the conference is cool. Yes, cool things happen at the conference, but it is truly and honestly about the people. And one of the lines I picked up there, I don't know where, communities need support, and that is even communities of all sizes, and we had a community there. There was like 10 or 12 of us, and we were all just looking out for each other, having fun, eating food together, talking together, showing tech off together, and you guys watched my phone reboot about 800 times.
That's true. Yeah, and it's exactly what you said. It was a great time. It was funny, guys, at dinner every night at the hotel, we would just line, we would take all their tables that the hotel set up all nicely and spaced evenly, and we would just take them all and throw them all together in this long table. Mm-hmm. And our group would just sit around the table. So they probably loved us for that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So this show is going to be a special, I want to say screening.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the right word, for your talk, and which was entitled, You've Just Installed Linux, Now What?
Yeah.
And I think it went over real good. I was sitting right in the front row there, and I had a great time. So, man, you did a great job.
Thank you. You know, I don't know if I've said this before on the podcast, but that was my absolute first time ever truly public speaking. I've talked in meetings before, but... You know, the people there, they're really not smart. But this was my first public speaking, and I got to say, for my first time, I think I did fair, but the basic here is, to be quite honest, don't hold back. It's just like you were saying when you were there, Steve. Don't let anybody tell you what you can and can't do, and don't let yourself tell you what you can and can't do. You got to keep breaking forward. You got to keep pushing forward. Because trust me, we can each do a lot.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I agree with that. Definitely don't hold back. And you went for it. And it was very entertaining. It felt like listening to a podcast from you, to be honest.
Thank you.
All right. So did we want to go over anything before we start that, Door?
Well, I mean, for the live listeners... Well, and for, I guess, for the recorded listeners, this coming Linux for the Rest of Us, thanks to the encouragement from Russ Winter at thetechiegeek.com, we are going to have a live OLF roundup show.
Linux Basics.
On Linux Basics. LINUXBASIX. And like I said at the end of the talk, anybody and everybody is welcome to join in. And everybody, we can take a limit of 400 people in the room. We can try to break it, but, you know, I don't think we're going to hit that high. And it's basically just going to be talking about things we saw, things we tasted, things we did, people we talked to, people we met, all of that kind of stuff this Friday.
Sounds like fun.
9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
At where? What site?
LinuxBasics.com. If you go there and click live, you can listen into the show live. Or if you download Mumble, there's a tutorial on Linux Basics telling you how to get that connected.
So anybody could join the show?
Anybody.
Wow.
Any and everybody.
Very cool. Well, I'll definitely be there.
Cool.
We also have a contest winner for the book. What was the book again?
I don't have it.
I forget the name of it.
It was a good book. It was a...
it was an O'Reilly book.
It was an O'Reilly book. It had, I think, an old man on the cover. It was,
Linux book.
It was a Linux book.
Okay. Did you want to do the contest winner?
Maybe?
Yeah, it was something like that. Did you want to do the winner before or after talk?
Oh, we can do it now. Okay. Basically, one of the more supportive guys throughout the time also put in a entry, and it was Linux Pocket Guide. He's always been nice. He's always been supportive. He's driven the last 2 years to OLF basically by himself, which I know is not fun. And he put in the suggestion, and remember, it was what would you like to see done at OLF, not what would you like to see and we will do at OLF. And he took advantage of that. He said, we should all sing a song together. And if we would have, I don't think anyone would have known what the song was.
Yeah. And I don't think it happened.
Nah, didn't happen. But he put a good suggestion out there. He went out of his way to come to OLF. He's always been really nice. So I handed him the book in person.
And who is this fellow?
Chuck, a.k.a. Annoyance, and now aka the Rhino.
I heard about that name. I think it's awesome. How did he get the new nickname the Rhino?
They were at, I believe, the Saturday night after party, and they were trying to get from one side of the room to the other, like a group of like eight of them, and I think Cody might have been the one who turned to him and said, "You're the Rhino, get him out of the way." And he basically, I don't want to say pushed, but he basically drove a path right through through the bar, and everybody followed. And Cody talked about that for at least a half an hour.
Oh man, I wish I could have seen that.
Yeah,
is that when MC Frontalot was playing?
Yes, which I completely missed because I was at a horrible Oktoberfest.
Yeah, but I well, you finally got there.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Then I walked for, I think it was 4.2 miles.
But we'll talk about that on Friday.
Yeah.
Door is a bit crazy. Crazier than you think, guys. And we'll explain on Friday.
Yeah.
Well done, Chuck. Good job on winning the book. It was great talking with you and meeting you. And he is truly the winner because he took me to the airport when I was leaving, when I had literally minutes to catch a flight. And hooked me up because I made the flight and everything went well and I got home. So Chuck is the man.
And that's the perfect example why he won the book.
Yeah.
Because he is a Podnutsian.
Yes. Yes. So well done. Hope you enjoy the book, Chuck. Yep. All right. So I think without further ado, Dor, I'm going to start the talk. What do you say?
Cool. Yeah. And for everybody who's catching this, I guess, for the first time, a couple days ago, we were at OLF. I got the green light, if you will, to do a talk, and it turned out to be the first talk of the first ever Meet the Penguin track, which is a follow-up to a paid class of Linux Basics, where they basically show you how to install Ubuntu, and they go through some basic descriptions of how Linux works. So I was the kickoff the next day on that beginner track, and my talk was called "I Have Linux Installed. Now What?"
And here it is. It's about 45 minutes long. Me and Dor will be back to cap the show off when it's over. So enjoy it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the brand new track, Meet the Penguins. My name is Dor Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. The goal of this class is really to try to bridge the gap between the users who already feel comfortable in other systems, and they really have a desire to make the jump. They want to learn about freedom. They want to learn about openness. They want to have their operating system their way. And the main thing is, you have Linux installed, now what? I will encourage everybody next year, the Linux Basics class, I sat in on it. They really encouraged people in very nice ways how to move forward, how to think differently, how to get over those initial humps that everybody's going to have, irregardless of IQ, just because it's a little bit different. DoorToDoorGeek.com is where everything's going to be posted. Audio for this, the presentation for this, any future information. Anyone with any question whatsoever, DoorToDoorGeek.com, I will answer any question as quick as possible. I do 5 podcasts a week. It's going to be 6 very soon. Anything from beer brewing, Linux, hacking your Android device, Android applications, because every day there's like 1,000 new ones. And Linux Basics, where we really try to get people to understand how to get things done in this system called Linux. First, I want to talk about something that I honestly consider very important. We've all seen technology jump at an insane rate in the last 5, 10, 15 years. With that said, I honestly hate to admit the tech industry as a whole is leaving a large segment of people behind. There's over 300 million people in the U.S. A lot of people who don't understand world numbers think that is a huge percentage of the Earth. It's actually quite small. In the world, there's over 1 billion people disabled. These people every day are falling farther behind what we take for granted every day. They might have access to the internet, but they are unable to use it, and they're unable to use their desktop computer to get what they need done. There are people out there who are trying to make things happen. Vision-impaired people, there are over 360 million vision-impaired people in the world. That's more than the population of the United States. That, to me, is quite significant. Absolutely quite significant. And 90% of these people do not live in the U.S. Some of these people are actually looked down upon as being cursed. And they are purposely left behind by their culture. We, in this first world, I think, have the opportunity to make a really big impact. I have personally tried to help. I'm on a monthly donation plan with AccessibleComputingFoundation.org. Much easier, theacf.co. With as little as $2 a month, you help fund, basically, a program where they award money to people who go out and fix accessibility bugs in open source software. You also get a free email, a account, where none of your email is scanned, none of your email is snooped, and you really are helping progress open source software to what I feel is going to be the ultimate. In like 20 or 30 years, I really do feel it is going to be the standard software in a lot of businesses and enterprise. And we have the opportunity to really make it catch up quickly. On to I have Linux installed, now what? I really do feel like everybody should go into this with a very simple and basic goal. And I promise you, everyone will be able to achieve this goal in less than a week, even with moderate and casual use. And that is break it. And then you should try to break it. And then once again, you should do everything you can to break it. And here's the logic behind it. When you're on a closed source system, you're almost riding a train. You're almost on a plane. You're more of a passenger. You have very, very little control over the overall experience. When you boot up, there's hundreds of processes starting where you have no idea. You just see a happy splash screen. In Linux, because it's so customizable, you have the ability to configure anything. And by anything, I don't mean anything. I mean anything. You can make Bluetooth not exist on your computer. You can make Wi-Fi not exist on your computer. You can add custom solutions. So your computer can be truly unique in a matter of minutes versus anyone else in the world, thanks to Linux. Here is the logic, because you can customize, you have the ability to improve your experience without knowing C++, without knowing any back coding languages. At the same token, because every configuration file is basically in clear text, you have your personal opportunity to break anything at your whim. So, with that said, the main reason I encourage people to break it is so you get more comfortable reinstalling your operating system. Because to be honest, you have to be able to reinstall just in case something goes wrong and you need your computer up and running right now. Some people say, have a condition. I might go 20 days with OS and then reinstall. Partially because I want to see what else is out there. I like seeing A versus B versus C. And in Linux, that's near never ending. And here's the real reason why Linux is unique versus closed source systems. Versus closed source systems, you really only have one fat layer when you are presented with your desktop on a computer. And by that, I mean you hit the button, everything happens, and then you're at a login screen. Then you log in. To you, it appears like one thing happened. It appears like your computer just started up. And that's it. In the Linux world, you have layers. You have multiple layers of things going on, besides kernels starting up, besides X starting up, besides all these other terms that might be brand new to you starting up. They are indeed different levels that have to take place for your full desktop to come up and start to run. And here's where the tweakability can start. I just said the word desktop, and I will tell you there's a class coming up later, which I encourage everyone to go to. We're going to get to that in a second. Package management software. This is the first big hurdle. Everybody on every other operating system for years, you had to manually go out. You had to manually search. You had to dig, you had to hunt, you had to peck. And you had to find a piece of software that you liked. You had to manually click download. You had to find where that file was then downloaded to, and then you had to double-click and install. I'll say, thankfully, with the Mac iPhone, it's put into people's heads the idea of an app store, where the store is presented to you, instead of you having to go out and find everything. I blame it on my weight, but my first example, at least, is going to be food-related. Okay, everybody should be able to understand this. There's different ways and different methods of you getting food. There's food delivery, where the food comes to you, and then there's going and getting food. In Linux, in most of the major distributions, most of the software you're going to need is going to be food delivery. You're going to open up on your computer a package management system, sometimes it's called Software Center, where you're presented with a menu. And then that menu tells you everything that is one-click installable. This is a paradigm shift compared to setup.exe, going to download.com, or whatever source you go to. It's presented to you. And all you have to do is click and download. And like Chromium is the free open source browser where you basically just open it up, search for Chromium, click download, and 30, 40 seconds later, you have yourself a genuine install configured, ready to roll. The second method of getting software on your computer, I say, is a bit of a hybrid. Not a lot of software packages do this, but I felt it was absolutely necessary to talk about. And that is where you yourself go out to go pick up food. But after you come home with your food, that company now has a link to where they can give you updates on the fly without you having to go back out and pick up more food. The example to that is the Chrome browser. The Chrome browser, when you go to download it, it's a .dev file or a .rpm file, Ubuntu or Red Hat based, or Debian or Red Hat based. And what happens is almost unique because it's genius. You double-click the dev file, you put in your password, Chrome gets installed, but something else happens. It goes into your local menu, and it adds Chrome as an actual entry. So now anytime there's an update, you get it. No extra work needed, no extra management needed. It's all done for you. The third way to install software is guaranteed the way a new user can break something. And that is to go out and download source files. I encourage people to try it at least a couple times when you first start just so you can see what's going on. This is actually a kind of higher end process for a new user because you have to revert back to your old ways. You have to go to a site. You have to download a set of files and then you have to drop to a terminal and try to configure and make and compile and install this software. Sometimes it works like a charm. Sometimes your computer won't boot. Period. And I will say more and more, people don't need to do this. I would say most people option for it because they want the quote-unquote latest, the cutting edge, the bleeding edge, and they figure, I'm going to go get it myself. Quick tip. If it's a piece of software that you've never downloaded from source and you want to compile, don't do it on your installed computer if you don't want to take a risk. Load up a live CD. Do it there. No harm, no foul, no blood. You're fine. If it works, then you know how to do it. If it doesn't work, you just turn off, take the CD out, boot back up, and you're once again ready to go. Okay, and this is one of the things I want you guys to remember immensely. The biggest mental difference, I think, between Linux and Windows or Mac is desktop environments. Desktop environments, in some ways, change everything on your computer. There is a talk a little bit later, Ryan Cather, I want to say it's at 1 o'clock. If you check your programs, I highly, highly encourage people, that is one talk you really need to go attend. And here's the only way I can explain it. If you've never seen National Treasure, please raise your hand. Okay. In National Treasure, one of the things they did was they found a pair of spectacles that had multi-layers of lenses. And they were looking at the Constitution, I believe. Okay. They flipped the Constitution on their back. And then there was nothing there. Then they looked through these lenses, and there was something. Then they flicked a switch on their lens, and it changed. Bottom line, it was there the whole time. But then they needed something to modify, and then once again, it modified again. A desktop environment actually changes nothing on your computer. It was there the whole time. A desktop environment is simply an interface between you and the back end of the computer. Some of those interfaces are very full-featured, with tons of right-click options, with pretty effects, with curved edges, with shines. Some of them are not. Some of them are very cut and dry, made for much lower-end computers, or just users who don't want the glitz, who don't want the glam, they just want speed. My computer, even when I had a P4 hyper-threading single core 2.0 gigahertz with 512 megs of RAM on it a couple months ago. from the time when I got my login window and I logged in and hit enter, before I could look back up, my desktop was fully loaded. I was running a desktop called Awesome. Some people hate it. I have to throw that out there. It's a super slim, light desktop geared for keyboard shortcuts. No glitz, no glam. Very little right clicks. Very little automation. You click in a thumb drive, you had to go mount the thumb drive yourself. Didn't automatically happen. Where other desktops, you simply plug it in. You're presented. We found pictures. Do you want us to open up an image viewer? So I really encourage people, one of the first things you should try, after you get a little comfortable, load different desktops. Load every desktop possible, actually, and play them. At the login screens where you can change what desktop you are logging into, but if you had VLC installed from before, then you load this new desktop, VLC is still there. Everything you learned about a terminal is still there. And that's one of the powers to the terminal. It doesn't matter what desktop interface you're on, terminal commands still work. There is also a terminal class coming up a little bit later, how to encourage people for that too. So it's only perception that changes with the desktop. You can still get everything you want done, you just might have to find a different route to get things done. Here are some of the more common desktop interfaces. KDE is the most polished, I think, by far, desktop, with the most customizations you can do to it. To the newest users, that might be a little bit overwhelming, but I will tell you, you will have to do less work to get what you need done. So I highly encourage people, try KDE. The other ones, play with. You have to come up with your own judgment on these. One of the biggest complaints I have, another sidetrack, is when people say better and best. Well, this is the best. Well, that is the best. Well, this is better than that. They're all lying to you. And you guys should know this. Better is a opinion. And best is a opinion. It's better for my workflow. It's better for how I think. It's the best from what I'm used to. You have to find your own. Don't always take what everyone says as being gospel. Take it as a grain of salt. Try it. See if you match them. Because to be quite honest, I found two people. Me and them are kind of alike. So when they say something's really good, I then know maybe I should go give it a shot. And most of the time I find they are right, and I agree with them. But you always got to have a little skepticism. Second biggest hurdle I feel like in Linux to overcome when you're coming from especially Windows is there is no C drive. With that, there is no D drive. There is no E drive. There is no F drive. And you can keep going. It's kind of ironic. Those drive letters limit Windows to how many connections and how many mappings you can have. Linux picks up a very older system where everything begins with a slash. If you're going to browse to your CD, the first thing you're going to look at is the slash. If you're going to browse to your home directory, the first thing you're going to do is look at a slash. If you're going to look for boot files, the first starting place is going to be slash, and everything grows off of that. I highly encourage people, Google Linux file system, and you will find plethoras, pages and pages of examples and definitions of how the Linux file system works. It is much too much to explain in this one class, but I will tell people one thing. For the first year, probably, you'll only need to know two directories off of a slash, home and media. Media in Ubuntu is where your thumb drives get mounted. Your CD-ROMs get mounted. Anything that's not there from the start of your computer and it was an addition, a USB drive, a removable drive, a DVD movie, all of that is in media. Your home directory is essentially the equivalent to the Windows XP documents and settings or Windows 7's users folder. And I say that almost just to make people understand, because there is definite differences. In the home folder, not only do you have your pictures, your documents, your music, your media, but it has the true configuration files for almost every application you run. When people ask you, you know, you want to change, well, you have to back up your Firefox folder, for instance. In some other systems, you have to go digging through other folders that you really shouldn't have been in the first place to do a true backup of everything related to Firefox. In Linux, home / your username, .mozilla. And if you copy that one folder, truly everything in Firefox is backed up. No extra work, no extra hassle. One of the keyboard commands I encourage people to look at least once when you're looking at your home folder and you see your folders, hold down Control and hit H. That will reveal hidden files. And most people, when they first do that, will immediately hit Control and H again. Because it can be slightly overwhelming. Because you're only looking at 8 or 9 files, and you hit Control H, and then there's 30 directories. Oh, gone. Now I feel good. Yeah. But it's definitely good to know. And that, to me, is the most important directory for any new user to really feel comfortable in, the home directory. Yeah. The only thing I will say that can be different is where your network drives gets mapped. Most of the time, you have to go and pick where you want that to be mounted. So it can be home, it can be media, but for thumb drives, it always gets into the media folder, and the home folder is probably going to be your most visited folder, period. Okay, now, the number one thing I really want to get through people's heads here, don't run Linux because you think it is impenetrable. You can't get viruses. You cannot get malware. You cannot get infections. Because if someone tells you that, once again, they are lying through their teeth. Any operating system that can read, that can write, and that can execute can be pwned. It can be taken over. It can be compromised. Period. It's possible. It's also possible. Tomorrow I could be asked to go to Mars. But it's possible. Okay? But it really is possible. The main reason why Linux does not even get infections right now is because we are not what they call low-hanging fruit. We're not popular. We're not easy. They want to basically infect as many as possible with as little work as possible. Linux isn't that. It just is not that right now. And even when it does become popular, which I firmly believe is going to happen here, it's not the year of the Linux desktop, but it's coming close. It's because we have so many people working in the back reacting so quickly that even when it does get infected, in less than 8 hours, there's going to be a fix out for everybody to download for free, and then you're not vulnerable. You're not going to have to wait till the next magical Tuesday, or you're not going to have to wait 3 or 6 months for a company to actually acknowledge, well, I guess we did have an issue. But it's fixed now. Don't worry about it. It's now, once again, secure. Okay. I started Linux over 5 years ago, and I will tell you, I had the mentality of, I can figure this out. I can figure this out. I will pound on the keyboard. I'll get dents on my fingers, but I will figure this out. And it was the stupidest move I ever made in my life. The biggest power with free software is not the software itself. It's not even close to the software itself. It's the community. If you join any forum, if you join almost any IRC channel in existence, if you just join a community, and there's a community for everything, and I mean everything, you will find people that are more than willing to almost stop what they are doing and personally hold your hand. And personally help you, personally give you guidance, and explain what they're doing along the way. I host 4 or 5 forums, and I will tell you the days of read the manual is all but dead. And I will tell you, I've seen people get flamed when they say, go read the manual, because they should get flamed. We're a community. If we don't support each other, who will? You know, the people will help you. And I will say, in IRC, it's almost a finicky environment. It's more, that is more of a physical community where you have to show up once in a while and pay your dues and say hi to people and quote-unquote bring cake once in a while. You know, be nice. Help somebody else if they need it. And then, when you need help, I've seen IRC people sit down with me for 3 hours holding my hand installing Arch Linux. Because I was brand new to it. And I can't follow a wiki. I have so much ADHD and OCD. You want me to read? I don't think that's going to happen. Okay? So needless to say, I broke Arch a couple times. And then I hopped in Peter 64 down in Australia. Literally sat there for almost 3 hours. And I could mentally hear his, hey, don't got to do this. And he literally sent me links and sent me commands on what to type and was explaining to me what it was doing. In the Windows and Mac world, how much would that support cost you? Hundreds of dollars. And then you would get snarky comments along with it. Not in Linux most of the time. Sorry? Well, yes. And then, of course, it's, can you reboot? You know, and I feel like that really is nothing but more than a time killer. Reboot. Trying to find the actual answer. And I will say, if you just type in Google, and yes, I've said Google like 4 times. I didn't plan on that. Linux forums, you will be overwhelmed. You will be digitally choked by the amount of forums that are out there. So don't hesitate on being picky. Okay? When it comes to distributions, almost every distribution has an official forum, but most of the more popular ones also have fan-generated forums. Sometimes, they're almost in competition of who's more helpful. Okay? So, if you have a question about Ubuntu, then you might want to visit the Ubuntu forums. With that said, there's probably 20-plus thousand active forums that are general, very general questions, just about Linux. Three of the forums that I help admin are just general. And I really do expect everything from left field, from my webcam is showing up, but it's green, to how do I install this printer? I expect those kinds of questions every day. And a lot of the people who admin those forums, they almost like the challenge. They almost like to say, I don't know that either. I need to go find it. So the next time somebody asks, I can answer them quicker too. It's the passion of open source and the people that set it aside. Don't let anyone fool you. The software is good, but it's the people that make it usable, that make it functional day in, day out. And those people will break their backs to help you. And I definitely enjoyed a little alcohol, so I have no more visual presentation. And that's okay.
It's supposed to be a blackout.
Yeah. There really is a lot about Linux that I honestly cannot even come close to covering in an hour. I will say it is almost the most fun I've had in 5 years, and it's been some of the most painful times I've had in 5 years. And it's because of old thinking, old computing thinking that I had to get over. I cannot encourage people to stop having preconceived notions of, well, this is how it worked before on this other computing system, because most of the time you're going to be dead wrong. Dead wrong. And I will say, door2doorgeek.com is my main website, door2doorgeek@gmail.com. Any questions? About anything, please don't sit there and get aggravated. I'm part of the community. I will be very happy to help anybody in any shape, in any way, or any form. I will remote into your computer, fix issues, and explain how I fix them. Or you can send an email into one of my shows, listen to a show, join that community, and get answers there as well. I will say I have lots of fun podcasting. We talk about nearly everything from massive, large Hadron Colliders, which run Linux. Cassette top TVs that run Linux. And I only knew one way to really impact people's brains on the scalability of Linux. With Windows, you have Windows Mobile, Windows RT, Windows i386, Windows 64, and supposedly some kind of supercomputing system, which I think is a farce. In Linux, Linux is Linux is Linux is Linux. Whether you're talking about a small embedded operating system controlling a valve on some train, or you're talking about the Large Hadron Collider, it is Linux, period. And what I was running today's presentation off of is a Linux computer. $60, I think $67 after shipping. And I will say, it might not be as functional as your desktop computer that costs nearly $1,000. But it's $60. I can do a lot of computing, a lot of automated tasks around my house, whether it be logging my chat during my shows, or whether it be hosting a chat server for my shows, with $60. You will never see a mini Windows computer for $60. The licensing fee alone would make it more than $60. And if you would see a mini computer like this for Macintosh, it might have better edges. But it would also probably be $2,000. Did anyone have any questions about anything, or was there something that someone wanted covered that they did not hear?
I'll plug you links for the rest of those videos.
Yeah, do you have a video series that someone might be able to benefit from if they didn't learn anything when they were here?
Linksforrestless.com.
Okay.
Rat poison.
It's not even a desktop environment. It's so light. It is the lightest thing you can interface with. About a year ago, I did a set of videos to help people get over hurdles. And what I did on those videos was take basic needs and show people how to install software and use the software to get things done, whether it be creating a DVD or connecting your email to VerizonEmail.com. LinuxForTheRestOfUs.com is based off of Ubuntu 10.04, which still has almost a year of support left. I do plan on doing newer videos here in the next 2 months, though, for Ubuntu 12.04. Which has 5 years of support, Jonathan?
Yes.
5 years worth of support. One of the things that a lot of people in the Linux world almost have a problem with is staying where you're at. You don't have to upgrade to the latest and greatest. You really don't. The first day this new distribution's out, don't start to itch and scratch and get all fidgety in your chair thinking, I gotta get it. It sounds good. You don't need it. You honestly don't need it. I ran Ubuntu 9.04 on one computer, which was my podcasting computer, because if I break that, I got a lot of crap about it. So I didn't upgrade that computer for about 18 months until I really felt comfortable with, I'm going to be able to do this because I do 5 a week. I don't have a lot of free time. I can do this in the next 2 days, and we'll be back up and running. But yeah, rat poison. Oh, okay. They're not going to mention rat poison in the desktop environment. Trust me on that.
There is a distribution out there that's offering it as a desktop.
Well, but there's also a distribution called Hannah Montana Linux. Okay.
Peter 64 uses it.
Well, I know. And now the only thing I really want to nail to people is the best thing about Linux is the niche. Okay? When you install Windows, you have Windows. You have the same Windows 3.4 billion people or whatever installed in the world. You got the exact same thing. And then you got to spend sometimes days to work to get it to where you want it. Not in Linux. You can have distributions focused towards ham radio and have all your ham radio tools already loaded. You can focus on video encoding and you can find a distribution focuses on video encoding. You can find distributions specifically geared on 2D game creation. And the number one place I will encourage people to go to is distrowatch.com. DISTROWATCH.com. By far, some of the nicest people host and manage that service, and they do have a podcast where they basically go over what's new, what's released, what's active, this got updated in a very informative fashion. I will say I'm going to push three podcasts that are not mine right now. And these are the news podcasts. This is where you can hear about this new distribution came out, and this is what it focuses on. Okay, one was DistroWatch. The second one is called Sunday Morning Linux Review, where the three of them are at this conference, Tony, Matt, and Mary. And that is smlr.us. They have a lot of fun while they do their cast, but they also educate a lot, an actual lot. The last one, I like it just because it's short, 3 minutes long. Here's the news, goodbye. It's called Linux News Log, where he basically just covers the high points of the news in the last week. I encourage people to listen to all of them, not because now it's time to go try this or try that, but just to hear what kind of advancements Linux is making, what kind of strides it is making. Because it really is phenomenal. Everything I've seen blows me away. The kind of things that Linux does, and in the heart, it's still just Linux. Not sure how much time we have left, but I want to thank everybody for coming out. I really encourage people next year, if you have any inkling at all and you still feel at all uncomfortable, that Linux Basics class was nearly epic in my mind and a steal for the price.
I want to mention, can you plug the podcast you do again for those who came in later?
Okay, yeah, I do 5 podcasts a week. If you go to DoorDoorGeek.com, you'll find links to podcasts about brewing beer, intro to Linux, pwning your Android device, taking back control, Android applications, new ones, cool ones, functional ones, and Linux Basics, where we try to make it like an online lug to where we can all bring our issues and we can resolve them in a very open format. And I'll say Linux Basics, everyone here next week can install Mumble. Go to Linux Basics, that is LinuxBasics.com, and follow the steps to connect Mumble. Every single one of you can be on the show next week. Every single one of you can have your voice heard. Every single one of you can ask a question. And I promise you, every single one of you can find resolution with any issue you come up with. That's my promise.
Can I ask questions?
Yes, sir.
Say you just installed Linux, like you personally. What's some of your personal favorite go-to apps that you just like to get right off the bat?
See, that's a personal question. What's the first thing I do when I install Linux?
Break it.
Well, now I try not to, because I've learned. But I'll say one of the first things I install, it's called Kupfer. Okay? Kupfer. To me, this is almost a magical piece of software. It's what they call an application launcher, which is an insult. It's not an application launcher. You install it, then you hit control and space, and you get almost a Quicksilver-esque on Mac or a launchy type interface on Windows. But you can do some very cool dynamic things with that application. I almost don't care about my desktop anymore. And when I say that, I actually don't care what desktop I'm running because I don't even interact with it. Kupfer, I can launch applications. I can launch FileZilla FTP and connect to a server. I can go and browse my bookmarks and launch my default browser. I can launch an alternative browser. I can batch launch applications all with a very minimal of clicks. Because to me, with my OCD, time's everything. Chop, chop, need to get things done. So I really want people to play with Kupfer if you have time. And again, ask questions. Yes?
Why wouldn't that be included in most distributions?
Well, distributions are created by people, and people are flawed. People do what they want to do. People have very strong opinions on what is right and what is wrong. A lot of people feel launchers are too complicated. I feel like stopping what I'm doing and taking the mouse and going up here and clicking on a menu a little bit too much. I just want to get what I want done. I don't want to browse applications. So it's really a personal preference. And people have many opinionated preferences on what should become installed by default. And I will say I've never found a single distribution that has it installed by default. Which means I have the opportunity to do it.
Why don't you include it in a new one called GUI only?
I think it would be a good fit. Sounds good. Definitely. Yes?
Can you recommend a distribution for PowerPC?
For PowerPC, I want to say the choices have went down, but you can still get Ubuntu 10.04 PowerPC version. I do not believe Linux Mint comes with that, unless I'm mistaken.
Debian. The new version of Debian does. Debian Squeeze.
Fedora. Yeah, but Ubuntu 10.04 still can. So I would honestly encourage that. It's the closest to ease of use with a lot of functionality.
Use the DistroWatch search engine.
True. Yes, sir.
Your little $60 computer, I know there's the great rage around about the Raspberry Pi.
Yep.
I ordered mine in June.
Very cool.
It was dispatched yesterday, thank you.
Very cool.
And we'll be here 21 days if I'm lucky.
Well, which site did you order it from?
RS.
Okay, Element 14, you get it in less than a week. You can order 10 at a whack.
That's what I heard after I ordered.
Of course.
But what was your little PC that you had?
This is called a MK802. They do have what is now called an MK802-2, which I know has extra ports on it. But I will say this out of the box runs Android Ice Cream Sandwich. The ports on it are mini HDMI, micro SD slot, standard USB power, and then they have what they call OTG USB, which is actually, I want to say, mini USB. And from this, you can hook up hubs, hard drives, keyboards, microphones, speaker, I mean, almost anything you want. I have Lubuntu loaded on an SD card. That was the operating system that we were in. If I take this out and plug it back up, we could connect to Netflix if we had a signal. Watch something.
What was the name of that one more time?
MK802-2.
Where did you get it?
I got it from miniand.com. miniand.com.
There's another one that's upgraded. I think it has the latest Cortex chip.
There's a lot of
them. I mean, they just come. You do a search for it, and they're popping up.
Yeah, this is the new Rage.
There's about 50 different ones.
Yeah, this is definitely new Rage.
Do you yourself own a Raspberry Pi?
I actually own two Raspberry Pis. I gave one away to a listener in New York, and I still have one Raspberry Pi, but it is earmarked for someone by the name of Lance, who wanted a mobile web browser for his business.
Is there a
web server?
Is there a specific case that you might suggest out of the ones that you've tried?
I will have to say this. I bought three Raspberry Pi cases. All of them required reading. I didn't do good at that. And to put it together, I broke all three because the quality was so poor. I will say there's a man in the back right in the room. If you have a Raspberry Pi and you want a quality case, check him out. Yes, sir.
Well, I was just pointing out on the guy.
Mayo. Any other questions? Okay. I really want to thank everybody for coming out. DoorToDoorGeek.com. That's the T-O, not the number 2. Any questions, please. I will be very happy to answer them. Thank you very much.
Very cool, Door.
And at the very end, we hear you say, awesome.
I heard that, too.
That was great. That was great. That's all I got to say.
Did you have fun doing that?
I really did, and I'm not going to lie to everybody, about 80%+ of it was basically impromptu stuff.
Really?
Well, I mean, if you noticed on the podcast, if I try to like read something, my speech impediment seems to kick in. It's like my brain's too busy trying to read versus just talk. So I just had like bullet points and that was it.
Man, I think that's the best way to do it too. You just want to talk because if you're reading, you're not really having a conversation with the crowd. So I think you got it right. Bullet points, just lay it out and just let it flow. I like the part where you said you were going to go to Mars.
Hey, they could call me tomorrow. But yeah, and I think the side effect from not having too many notes was I was able to maintain eye contact with people.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it, so.
Yeah, and
I'm looking forward to more from you, to be honest.
Well, and I will say there is video of this. I don't have it yet. Byer Brown, to be quite honest, my very good friend who's from Pittsburgh. Unfortunately, the Steelers are there too. He came out with his friend and a full, at least semi-professional, to me it was professional, rig. And they recorded the video. Byer's a very hardworking man. I'm going to try to get that in a week or two.
Sweet. Can't wait to see that. And because the room was full, in case anybody was wondering.
Yeah. I talked to Kevin O'Brien, basically the chair of OLF, and he basically said, wow, Dor, we made a big mistake. We had that in much too small of a room. A couple people said they saw at least 10 to 20 more people come in the room and have to leave.
Oh, are you kidding?
Because there was no room to sit. The whole back wall.
I would have gave him my seat.
Well, you didn't see it. I had your undivided attention.
That's right. I'm serious. For me, that was the best talk of the whole fest.
Thank you.
All right. We're not going to do any emails this week. We're going to wait till next week. We have a fully fledged show again, but we just wanted to get this out to you guys as soon as possible and let you enjoy that while we recuperate and get our energy back for next week's show. Because to be honest, I am still actually recuperating. I'm getting old. And that weekend took a lot out of me. This was like being a kid again in those days.
Yeah. I mean, I was there 5 days, so 4 nights, like, hold on, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, no, 5 nights, I might have gotten combined 20 hours sleep.
Really?
28 maybe hours sleep. Yeah.
The naps were key.
Oh, yeah.
Much needed. They were All right, man. Anything else you want to go over, Dor, before we kill the show tonight?
I really want to thank everybody I ran into at OLF, everybody. And I'm terrified to say names because I'm going to forget so many people. But all the Podnutsians that came out, I got to shake your hand. You guys are the reason I went out there. You guys are the real reason I went out there. To shake your hands, to chit-chat, to eat dinner with, to have a beer with, to walk a couple miles with. to have fun.
Same here. And man, my expectations were met. I got to meet a lot of great guys. And again, I'm not going to name names either, but everybody was awesome.
Yeah.
I can't say name one person.
Well,
that was,
well, and I've,
nothing, and nobody was wrong.
Right. And I've got to throw out there, Steve C said it without saying it. This is not a Linux fest. This is a people fest. You know, I mean, about a third of the Podnutsians, I'll say, either don't run Linux or maybe have it installed on a computer sitting on the side. They don't use it even close to full time.
Yeah.
They had just as much, if not more fun than us.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Some people really made the most of it.
Yeah. I am going to see in about a month if someone from OLF wants to come on and talk about how it went, what they thought. What are their plans for the future?
Well, next fest is Jonathan's, right? Northeast Linux Fest?
Yes.
Duh. And what's the dates for that? He always tells me every time I talk to him, and I forget.
I know. He says it to me, too. I want to say March 16th, March. 17th, and 18th. It's right in the middle of the month.
Sounds good. It's close to there, yep. If we're not exactly right. But it's at, do you know the website, door or no?
Putting you on the spot. Northeast GNU Linux Fest. No, I don't know it. It's Northeast GNU Linux Fest. It's being held this year at Harvard. So it's going to have plenty of room. And I do believe he's going to be one of the few, and by few, I mean next to no other Linux Fest, where he's going to have free Wi-Fi available to everyone.
Ooh. By the way, speaking of Jonathan, he actually spoke at Ohio Linux Fest too.
Oh yeah.
And that was an awesome talk as well, I must say.
Yeah. Okay. His website is northeastlinuxfest.org. That's his website. And it is the 16th and 17th of March. I got to say this about Jonathan. There's no doubt in my mind I couldn't see every talk because it's impossible. But I guarantee you he had the only talk that had genuine passion in it. He's not talking about how you can make more money. He's not talking about how you can stream media over your home network. He's talking about something that really needs to be done and should bring a global impact on the computing world, and not just how to install a Apache or VLC or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, if he keeps doing talks like that, then there's no doubt in my mind that he's definitely going to impact the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, good job, Jonathan.
And I will say, I want to thank, I believe his name was David, who stood up in the middle of Jonathan's talk and slammed like a 20 on the stage and basically demanded other people to do the same.
It was David Christensen.
He is the man.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
And if I had cash on me, I would have been right there, but the wife won't let me have cash.
Yeah, well, it would have been kind of wrong to just yell up to see if Jonathan takes PayPal on the spot.
I know, but in hindsight, I bet you he had a square in his pocket or something.
That's awesome. And on my awesome note, anything else, Dor? Where can people find you?
DorDorGeekJock.com. Any and everything related to me. Don't forget, Linux Basics will have the full rundown of the OLF. This is probably going to be basically the last cast dedicated to OLF for a while, unless we get somebody from the organization on. I don't want to over OLF people, because like PC Freddy was really mad because I kept inviting him to the Voxer group and he kept hearing all the cool stuff that was going on, and he kept Google talking to me, "You guys are buttheads," but he didn't say buttheads.
We'll catch him at one of these fests.
Absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Again, like I said, we're going to read emails and do voicemails next week. If you want to send us an email, send it to mail@podnuts.com. If you want to send us a voicemail, call 7076-PODNUT on a phone, and we will get it, and we will play it. That's going to be it for Linux for the rest of us for this week. See you next time.